Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, April 24th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
What's your name, Dollface?
Why, I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. The multi-talented Blade T. Bannon is back today for part two of our conversation, which, as we learned last week, conveniently falls into both the Erotic Mind and the Sex Education series. But wait, you didn't miss part one of this chat, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 372, and voila! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search.
I hadn't seen a body put together like that since I'd solved the case of the murdered girl with the big tits.
I see. Well, and I'm here to tell you that Blade will read again from his latest book, Primal Fear. So you don't want to miss that. Blade also invites you to visit him on his site, bladetbannon.com, where you can purchase all his books, both the photography ones and the nonfiction. Today's podcast is brought to you by the ideal sponsor for this pervy series, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, fetish wear, and gear right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site.
Listen, you phony fruitcake!
The fruitcake thing for sure. Phony, not so much, I don't think. You'll surely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun and, I might add, easy. Yesiree sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. That's why. Now, thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit my stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Hey, Blade. Welcome back to drdicksexadvice.com. It's good to have you back. We had such a good time together last week. And I'm looking forward to more smutty things from you, don't you know?
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
So last week, we talked predominantly about your book of photos, Daddy Hunt.
There you
and,
go.
And it's by Bruno Gmunder, the preeminent publisher of photography. And then we started a little bit on your book, Primal Fear, and that's where I'd like to pick up this week, if that's okay with you.
That's perfect.
Excellent.
Be an absolute pleasure.
I still got tingles from last week's reading of your erotica. And I want to remind our audience that your new book, Primal Fear, is what we in the business call fictional nonfiction. So it has really insightful, wonderful things to say about fear and sexuality and emotions and primal emotions and whatnot. But it also has plenty of extraordinary erotica, which blows me away, so to speak, as it were.
Oh, nicely put.
So the second chapter of your book is titled Fear, A New Friend. We talked briefly about this last week, I think. There is a thrill, maybe even a high, associated with fear or facing one's fear, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. The high that is associated with it would be that there are two levels of it. One of them is that you've got something that you've been running from or denying yourself for a long bit of time. So that euphoria of conquering and pushing past right. that fear. But also something physically demanding, the physical sensation of overcoming that is very cathartic as well.
Right.
So those are the two physical and emotional aspects that go into it. And there's what I call your primal id or dragon, and your ability to want to control and contain and be in the civilized society and reject a valuable part of yourself.
Right.
And that gives you great strength.
Right.
So all parts of your psyche are very valuable. So by embracing this yeah. fear and conquering it or harnessing it.
Harnessing, right.
Yes.
Because yeah. I think that's why thrill seekers of whatever stripe talk about their pursuits as both being recreational and cathartic. I think we touched upon this the last time you were on the show back in 2011. And we were talking about this in terms of BDSM and power play and power exchange and all that kind of stuff. And so could you touch upon that a little bit more this time around?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. There was a great scene in the movie X-Men First Class where Charles Xavier is training Beast, and he discusses the two natures within him. First, man's animal nature, and second, his struggle to control or contain it. And his struggle to conform. It was the statement Charles uses to conclude the lessons that struck me. But I'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, I'm sure you've heard most people say at one time or another, I shouldn't be doing this. This can be especially true when these primal desires express themselves in sexual ways.
Right.
Nowhere is this more common than in the BDSM kink fetish communities. The only difference is that this group has learned to recognize their primal desires, and in doing so, they begin to accept and embrace them. They acknowledge that these desires or primal urges are but one of many aspects that make up the greater whole. Much like a diamond, each facet is beautiful in its own way, yet contributes to its overall beauty and giving it depth and balance. Therefore, exploring this is of great interest. You know, and I find that exploring every facet of your sexuality is very valuable. Why stifle it if it's there? It's funny because I was talking to the psychologist. He was awesome. And he was describing the sensory cortical homunculus, which is your sensory mapping of your brain, the cortex. And your genitals are right down dead center. Just wow. above it is your feet. Your oral is huge area in your hands.
How you do go on?
Oral, hands, feet, and genitals. What more can you say, right. you know?
And talk about primal. Is that not, you know, what it's all about? I mean, running from something or grabbing something or sucking on something or mm-hmm. being aroused by something. I think that's absolutely fascinating. Absolutely
yes.
fascinating.
So those that are very orally fixated, you're okay. You're really doing great.
Oh, good. Phew.
I thought you might enjoy that aspect.
Right. So I don't suppose that we come out of the womb with an innate sense of fear, but we certainly do learn to be afraid. And again, this is a double-edged sword sort of thing. This emotion... fear can save our lives just as well as cripple us and prevent us from living our lives fully.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that I ask the reader to look at. Say, okay, there's fears that are very useful. And then there's fears that we learn from the past that are outdated. Like something that happened to you in your past once doesn't predict that it's going to happen every time in the future.
Right.
So is it necessary to hang on to it any longer and deny yourself this experience,
right.
you know, that you could have and actually enjoy and continue enjoying and enhance your life?
So is there a way to decipher what kind of fear my fear is, for example, like, you know, is it the life, you know, affirming fear or the life protecting fear, or is it the death dealing kind of fear, the one that would prohibit me from growing? And I mean, how do I find that out about?
Now you're asking the deep questions, aren't you?
This is why I get paid all this really big money.
I go into more detail on that in the book and in how to decipher. And one section is called The Past is the Past. And it lets you decide, okay, is this valuable or is this something, because your life is ever changing and growing. So you need to adapt new roadmaps, so to speak, as you go that fit where you're going. And then there's, as you know, life-enhancing things that keep you alive and free from damage and other things. Those are basic primal instincts that serve a good purpose. And most of this stuff pertains to your sexual desires. And okay, now, am I being told by society that these sexual desires are bad and I'm buying into it? Or is there a purpose? Are they valid? And rules are made to protect, not to prevent. Right. So if there's a law in place, then it's there for a reason. You're all grown adults, so you know what the reason is, and you can discern. However, if there is a law in place, Race Bannon put it in beautifully in his book, If You Want to Follow a Particular Fetish or Desire, and it's not exactly on the line. He said, take an element out. He said, let's say you're into doctor play. You get a partner and they put on a lab coat and a stethoscope, and you still have the element needed to create that fantasy without actually being in a doctor's office and so on and so forth. Although some people have done that, but you get the general idea. Right. You picture your fantasies, and if it's something that can't be fully enacted, then take elements from it. They trigger elements that work for you.
Wow. That's amazing. So let's continue that talk about the connection between fear and sex. The reason I'm so fascinated by this is I'm planning two papers to deliver to a conference in San Diego later in the year about sexual trauma and the after effects of sexual trauma. And or physical trauma to like one's genitals and stuff like that. And our bodies hold on to memories, it seems to me, and certainly our mind does. And you touched on this briefly just a little while ago when you said, you know, creating new maps, new ways of looking at things so that what may have happened in the past will not necessarily be a predictor of what will happen in the future under similar circumstances even.
Yeah, and that is one of the hardest things to, if you've got something so deeply, for lack of better words, burned or embedded, yes, ingrained, right, in your brain, it's webbed in with sensory input.
Oh, absolutely.
Visual, sound, smells, any one of those things can trigger a relive of that memory.
Right.
So just to say someone, oh, just let it go and move on, it's not realistic.
It's true. It is true. Absolutely.
So what I've done is I've had people that have had traumatic experiences and want to experience this fetish in a positive way, but they don't know how to get past their barrier.
Right.
So we take it in little steps and break it apart. And we find the things that are the most sensitive triggers and remove them from the equation. And start with the things and build a whole new dynamic around it that is pleasurable.
Right.
Yeah, and that happens a lot. In my previous book, I referred to as Broken Toys, somebody that was really aggressively wanting to get into the BDSM dynamic and everything, and they got involved with someone that was way over their head, and they just thought, well, I can dish out as much as you can take, and they ended up as a broken toy.
Right.
And then they never wanted to come back and explore more.
Right.
And it was just one of those things. However, that doesn't mean it's the end. It can mean the beginning for somebody else to rebuild. And you actually, that makes you stronger, because you understand the difference.
Right.
It's not all this beautiful bed of roses. You said, okay, I know both ends of the spectrum, so I'm wise.
Right.
And I can enjoy now more fully, realizing the difference.
I do a lot of work with people with sexual trauma in their background, and one of the tools that I use is a thing called Sensate Focus, which is basically what you just said, is, you know, how to desensitize a traumatized part of the body and resensitize it for pleasure. And, you know, that's a task, a and some people accomplish it and some people don't. But not attending to it at all, I mean, one can, you know, live the rest of one's life, you know, in real misery because they didn't even attempt.
Yeah, you continue living that trauma the rest of your life, and whenever those stimuli come in just randomly,
right.
And it's, as you said, it's not an easy task for those situations. But being brave enough, I stated in the very beginning a Spanish proverb that says a life lived in fear is a life half lived.
Right, exactly that. Exactly.
And
that.
So it says be courageous, and even if you don't succeed, you're trying.
Right.
And that's why I got into the heavy sexuality and made it almost like a very erotic novel, because some people don't like the gushy, messy, sloppy, sexy part of it. It's like, that's our animal sex. That's what
that's
we are.
Right.
You know?
That's right. That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
I'm going to get really gritty and give you all the details, and you're going to swallow it.
See how you are. So much of the dominant culture instills a sense of risk as well as thrill about sex. And for some, that's an invitation to chase the thrill. But for others, that prohibition against is against the risks. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, and it's rather interesting because people say, oh, they're missing out and so on. But so many people I've had conversations with and thoroughly enjoyed was the classic One That Got Away,
right.
Because that fed them fantasy material for masturbation for months, years. And so they still got to live out a fantasy in their safety zone. So to say that they're denying it, yeah, but they're in their comfort zone. I am saying you can't grow in your comfort zone.
Right,
so
push
the comfort zone so that you can grow and expand. You know, that's how we learn. We get a new job, we're having to learn new things, we're out of our comfort zone.
Yeah.
But once we get a learning curve finished, we're great.
Right.
Great lovers are made, they're not born that way.
That's so true. That is so true. So this tug between excitement and confusion is, you know, what it's all about. I mean, everyone who is a sexual being now had that awkward phase in his or her life when she didn't understand or he didn't understand, you know, the powers of their sexual attraction and their eroticism and the pull of their hormones on their body. And yet, you know, once we learn how to deal with that and not be frightened and intimidated by it, you know, we become, you know, full-fledged human beings.
Yeah, you harness that inner strength that you are shunning away,
right.
You know,
right.
And you become a very intimate sexual being,
right.
Because you can tap into that, and it really brings such a level of intensity and passion to your sexuality. It's a great dynamic. It's a fantastic dynamic. And I'm finding a lot of younger sexual partners right now that are way up in their head during
yes.
sex. It's
oh.
like, what am I doing right? What am I doing wrong?
How do I look? How do I smell?
Do I need to put my hand here? And I'm like, let go. Just let go and enjoy the ride.
It's so true. It's so true
yeah.
what you say.
It's okay. Just have fun. No expectations.
Right.
That's rule one.
Yes.
Go in with no expectations.
Right.
And you'll go out with no disappointments. You know, it's great.
Very cool.
And
so,
I love that. But, yeah, it's all about getting down and gritty.
There you go. So I got to tell you, the more that I read your book, the more that I thought, my God, this is not only, you know, a very instructive and helpful manual, but it's also this marvelous work of erotica. You are one smutty puppy. Was it your intention to titillate as well as to inform?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
I mean, I wanted to put in, besides the factual material, I wanted to put in some storylines that brought associated with the points to drive
right.
the points home, but also make it entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a dry factual book is great. I've read many of them. But when someone has entertaining little epitaphs to go with it, it makes me laugh. It gets me in tune with what's going on. And in this book, I actually asked some other players that are pretty heavy players to, if they would be willing to contribute a story of their own about personal experience. So, because I was getting the feeling, okay, this is, yes, very heavily my life experience, but I don't want it to be totally narcissistic sounding. You know what I mean? Like, okay, this is my path, and I reiterate through the pages. I'm like, okay, everybody's is different. This, I'm just sharing this.
Right,
so I'm like, okay, we need to get some other points of view in there. So I added a couple of other stories.
Would you read again for us, please, please, please?
Yes, I will. This one is an interesting one.
Last one was an interesting one, too.
Yeah, well, that guy, it was funny because that guy was at one point trying to push me off, and then when he climaxed, he held me on. I'm like, okay, you can let me go now. This is an interesting scene because it starts off with the internet, which everybody is so familiar with these days, and how a simple internet hookup could go so much further. Basically, he sent me some hot pictures and he wanted to hook up. I was all game and asked him to come to my apartment. His reply blew me away. He said he lived in a big ranch-style house in northern Scottsdale and wanted me to fulfill a fantasy. He gave me directions to his place and said he would leave the first floor bedroom window open. He wanted me to climb through the window. He said I would find him lying on the bed naked. He wanted me to come in, hold him down, fuck him, breed him, and leave. He advised me to be quiet because his roommate would be in the room next door, and he didn't want him to hear what was going on. Holy shit, I thought. I was so turned on by the scene, my primal desires took over, and I went for it. I didn't ponder any of the possible things that could go wrong. Besides, I thought, I interviewed this guy enough already. I jumped in my truck and drove as the sun began to set. The ranch was quite a ways out in the desert. As I pulled into the gravel driveway, I turned off the headlights. With only my parking lights, I coasted in. In the early light of dusk, I could see the open bedroom window directly in front of me. It was just as he had described. I turned off the engine, rolled to a stop next to it, and quietly got out. I slowly passed through the window and entered the room. Looking off to my left, I spotted a clear form of a muscular, furry body lying on the bed face down. As I approached, I could see his back rise and fall in rhythmic breathing. I moved to the edge of the bed. My gaze drifted up from his thick feet to his strong, muscular, furry legs. I reached out and ran my hand down his closest leg. In response, his cheek muscles flexed and his cock pulsed from between his legs. It was a beautiful cock and perfectly exposed. I stroked his furry legs again, and his shaft continued to grow. I quietly stepped back. I spotted a chair in the fading light and walked over to it. Not a word was spoken. The only sound was the rustle of my t-shirt as I pulled it off over my head and tossed it onto the chair, the soft clunk of my boots as they hit the floor, and then the clank of my belt buckle as I pulled off my jeans. Even with my clothes gone, I noticed it was hot in the room. The open window allowed the desert heat to fill the air, and I was beginning to sweat. Naked and hungry, I walked over to the bed and looked down upon him. I could see beads of sweat running down the length of his spine. Oh, I loved the taste of it. My inner beast was ready to feed. And I'll leave it there.
No, stop. Don't stop. I love it. It's marvelous. I love hearing people read their own work. It's really grand.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so that was a very interesting one because I harnessed it his fear. He wanted to be bred, but yet the very next paragraph he said he left an open condom packet on the nightstand. So during the course of the whole scene, I was building it up and whispering in his ear and getting him to scream into the pillow, but not too much where he would get caught. And we got really loud. Yeah. But you'll have to find out the rest of the story of what happened with everything. But it has a really good climax, as one would suggest it having.
So I want to move on a little bit and talk a little bit about sexual awakenings. and how they can induce loads of fear. The fear of being discovered or misunderstood, the fear of not knowing what to do, or the fear of not knowing if what we are aroused by is normal. And the list goes on and on, right?
Right. Yes, it does.
So this push and pull between our desires and the things and our uncertainty creates this aura of fearfulness. And again, as we have talked about, some people get through this and get to the other side and actually can use this as part of their arousal, but other people get stuck and they are so afraid and so intimidated and so ashamed by their desires that they just can't move.
Yeah, it's that third part of the fright or flight. There's the paralyzed.
Yes, like the deer in the headlights thing. Exactly.
Oh, what do I do? What do I do? And of course, sometimes when they're caught in the middle of an intense sexual act, they freeze up and then they're along for the ride. And then after they come out the other side, they're like, whoa. Good thing I froze up.
You always can find the silver lining, huh?
Yes, yes. But yeah, and that's that whole thing when you've got that triple play, you've got confusion thrown in with confusion apprehension, then that kind of plays into the whole excitement factor because you're excited over the fact that you're confused, but you don't know why.
And why did these things come together? Oh, my God.
I'm turned on, but I shouldn't be turned on.
Right.
Oh, my God, what am I going to do? I'm getting more excited.
Right,
right. And
everyone
all that.
Can hearken back to, our adolescence when, that was like an everyday occurrence.
Oh, my God, yeah. And it's like, what do you do? It's like that scene with the guy. It's like, I really wanted to experience men. They turned me on. But it's like, how do I do it? And I turned to some rather risky behavior of hitchhiking.
Yeah.
But it got some wonderful payoff consequences. Right. Would I recommend it to others? No. But there were some great things. And what happens with people is if they're not given an outlet, they will eventually create one for themselves.
Right.
So it's best to go in full feet and get all the facts and find out what the best way to do it is and then run in and have someone there if you can to guide you through.
Right. The interesting thing is that fear also involves the fear of what others will think of us if they knew. I suppose that this comes from all the prohibitions that our culture has around sex, and particularly edgy sex. Like, people can happily identify themselves as sexual beings, but if, their sexuality or their eroticism is edgy or kinky or pervy in one sense or another, then, they find themselves stymied in being able to talk about that with others.
Yeah, that's a tough challenge for people. I mean, as I mentioned with the cortical homunculus, if they only knew that this is all kind of wired stuff in our brain and it's all there, it's part of our physical nature and our sexuality. But I did a whole chapter on fear-based societies and social groups, and a lot of those fears are birthed from those social groups and how you're brought up. So it makes it very difficult when you realize you have these attractions that seem very natural to you, why it seems prohibited to be able to enjoy them or explore them.
Right.
And that's where that whole piece comes in that chapter about tactics for assessing and saying, okay, let me take this apart. Does it make sense? And if it does, good. If it doesn't, then why?
Right.
And get the reader asking questions and, looking for resources, saying, okay, well, now that you're asking, look around and see what else is out there.
Exactly.
And you might find that you're not alone.
Right. And so this really touches on something really important, it seems to me, in our culture, is that fear is also a real powerful tool for social engineering. I mean, the powers that be can keep us fearful of one another as well as ourselves, They pretty much have, you know, us have their way with us, right? If everyone's the enemy, or our sexuality is you know, suspect, or you know, all those kinds of things, we're constantly off balance, and you know, unscrupulous things can transpire because people are engineering this fearful environment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they go through and they say, oh, they control the media and this and that. And, you know, I had a friend that was like, you know, I've got all those friends. Everybody's got a friend or two that are conspiracy, everything. And they're very fun to be around. I really love it. You know, he was referring to people that succumb to this kind of, you know, bombardment of either media or anything else as sheeple because they just don't think for themselves.
Yes,
they just follow
and
are herded around and such. And it's trying to convince people to get out of the sheeple mentality, you know, and expose them to new ideas and culture or whatever the venue is that you're hoping to enlighten. And I can't even understand that. But I always like to put a silver lining on it. And I said, you know, all this gloom and doom about, you know, social programming, two things, actually. The first thing is, no matter how you look at it, we've all been victims of social programming.
That's so true. Absolutely.
It's like, you can deny it if you want, but ever since you were little, you were spoon-fed information in all different ways and the best of intentions.
And selected information.
Exactly. So, you know, someone once said it was like going to the dentist. You had a cavity, they drill it in your head, and then they would pack it in, and you really didn't have a choice in the matter.
Uh-huh.
Well, you're an adult now. You can drill that crap out.
Right.
So it was a very good comedian had mentioned that. So now you're an adult, and you can look at the facts and make an educated decision and say, hey, this really doesn't make sense. I know it was told to me, but that doesn't mean it's just so, you know.
That is so true.
So in light of all that, there's now classes in high schools where they actually look at media and all sorts of presentations of, quote, factual material, and then the students are taught to see if it's propaganda or not and look for key phrases like X equals, you know, XYZ news equals politics, you know, or all encompassing statements in the background, you know.
Images even, you know, American flags and, you know, pictures of Jesus or crosses and stuff like that. All of those are touching into, you know, real primal, again, your word, primal things in our psyche that is tipping us to, you know, to think the way that these people are manipulating us in the media or whatever. I mean, it's a fascinating, fascinating thing. I think your book is absolutely stunning. It ought to be on everybody's should read list. It's not only informative and interesting, but it is, as I said before, smutty as hell, and I love it. Good. Our time for today is up again, and I could go on and on, obviously. But before we go, would you give us your website address again? Walk us around a bit. Tell us where we can buy your books.
Sure. The website, once again, is www.bladetbannon.com. And Blade T. Bannon is all strung together. And then it has two sections. It has the author section. Actually, two sections. Author, photographer, and then contact. And if you were to go into the author section, it will have an icon for each book. And if you click on it, it'll take you right to Amazon. And you can purchase the book through Amazon, and you can get it as a bound book, or you can get it as an internet version. And in the photography section, it has the same.
Great. Outstanding.
If you want an internet version of a book. Yeah, I guess if they had it, you could go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been such a joy. I'm so glad that you could come back and spend some more time with us. And, you know, who knows? When your next book comes out, we probably will chat again.
Terrific, yes. And I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Dr. Dick. I love you, and you are so much fun to be on the show with.
Thank you, kiddo.
All right, you have a good one.
Bye now.
All right, bye-bye.
What a terrific show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week on Monday for a brand new twofer show. I'll be chatting with educator, activist, and prolific author of edgy erotica, Laura Antino, and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself, or one of the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you'd better call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Well, take a look at my sex toy review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. Look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site, and remember, a portion of every sale comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. How great is that?
So long, dollface.
Okay, until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.